And we're holding on page Chof Hei in Rav Masia, Os Yud Zayin. Here we have probably one of the most famous stories in all of Shas, the story of Tanur Shalach Noi.
Page was it?
Page Chof Hei in Rav Masia, Os Yud Zayin. We were talking about Einos Dvarim, about when a person insults somebody else verbally or otherwise hurts them verbally. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story where Rebbe Eliezer felt that he had been treated that way, and that had very severe consequences, as we'll learn in the story. Tanan Hasam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim. Now you have like this, an oven. Rashi describes the ovens in those days were shaped basically like a big upside down pot. It would be made out of earthenware. It would be attached to the ground. There was a hole on top through which the smoke would come out, and that would be where when you bake bread or cook things or whatever, you'd take them out through there. There was a smaller hole on the bottom where you'd soak the oven and whatever, and you'd put on you'd smear around the oven a layer of clay so to insulate it so it would hold its heat. That was what the ovens were like in those days. Now, the Torah tells us that an oven, which typically they're made out of earthenware, is makabel truma, like any other earthenware keli, even though it's attached to the ground, doesn't make it usually things that are attached to the ground are not makabel truma, but an oven, the Torah tells us, is makabel truma. So now you have various cases that describes in Masechta Kelim where it's possible to construct an oven in such a way where it's not makabel truma. So one of these cases was the subject of a machlokes. If you cut the oven into layers, so you take this upside down pot shaped like thing, and you cut it into like rings. Choyas actually means like rings. So you cut it into, you have a ring that's attached to the ground, a few tefachim tall. On top of that, you have the next ring, which forms the next few inches up of the oven, and so forth until the top. And you put sand, or in a different place it actually explained, means a type of cement made out of sand, between one ring and the next. And then you smeared it with the clay on the outside. So now you have from the outside it looks like every other oven, but in between, if you were to take off that insulating layer of clay, then you would find that it's been cut into pieces, into rings, and between each ring and the next there's the cement. Rebbe Eliezer Matar, Rebbe Eliezer holds that oven is not makabel truma anymore. The chum matamim, the chum say it's still makabel truma. Tosfos actually discusses, it's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos discusses the technicalities behind it. There are cases, first of all, Rabbi Eliezer would agree that if you hadn't put in that cement between the pieces, then for sure still it would be makabel truma. He's saying, though, that the cement between one piece and the next makes it that now it's not considered a complete oven anymore. Vice versa, you have Mishnayos over there that mention, now you could do the other way around. You could put this sand-based cement on the outside of the oven and then put the insulating layer of clay above that, and then the Chachamim would agree that such an oven is not makabel truma. Because there you have, there's something between the insulation and the oven itself. But here where you have, there's nothing, the insulation is directly on the oven. It's just that you have the pieces of the oven themselves are separated by the cement, then this is the machlokes. And the Mishnah says, Vizehu tanur shel achnoi. This is what's called the oven of achnoi. My achnoi, now why are we calling it that? Or one explanation is why do we need to be told the name of this type of oven? Why is it negeya to us? Tosfos brings actually there's a different gusa that not achnoi but chachnoi. In which case it may the Gemara is going to say over here that an achna is a type of snake. Well, another name for that type of snake is chacham. We sometimes find in the Gemara that ayin and ches are interchangeable. They're both, you have to consider the Saudi pronunciation of them, which was the universal pronunciation among Jews in those days. They're both letters pronounced deep in the throat, ayin, ches. So there's a certain similarity between them, so therefore sometimes one could be interchanged with the other. Tosfos says also it might be, in the simple sense, there was a fellow named Chachnoi or Achnoi who made such ovens. But why is it negeya for us, for future generations, to know that the oven is called that? Amar of Yehuda Mashmul, she kipu dvarim ka'achnazu, because they surrounded this oven, though there was a whole discussion about this oven, like an achna. An achna, now we have that at the end above a kama in the story of Rav Kahana, we also had, this is a type of snake that lies there with its tail and its mouth, so that nobody can get through. unless you step over it, which is not always safe to do. So we had over there, for example, that there was such a snake blocking the entrance to where Rav Kahana was buried until Rav Yochanan asked Mechila. We're going to have later in our Masechta, we're going to have a couple of examples of that. So here, they surrounded it with discussions and arguments like an achna, like a snake that lies in a circle. The timuhu, and on that basis, they declared that it's makabel truma, that it's able to become tummy. One point being, Reb Nissen Goyen has so that this here we have the whole all the details of the story. The Gemara in Brachas mentions it very briefly because the Gemara is discussing over there about various cases where a person is to be put in nidui. And it mentions briefly our case because we're going to go on to say in our story that that's what happened to Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Nissim takes the time over there and explains the whole story in detail based on, he says, I learned directly from Rabbi Goin the meaning of the story. And so he explains when it says that they surrounded it like this achna, meaning, in other words, like they gave Rabbi Eliezer no way out. He's not going to be able to argue successfully against their opinion, against their proofs that it is, in fact, Mekabel Truma. Well, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. On that day, Rabbi Eliezer gave all the different arguments in the world. He brought every possible argument to argue that this oven is not mekabel truma. But the Chum did not accept it. Whatever argument he brought, they found some way to slug it up. So at the very least, even Yaakov points out that, listen, even they might not say that it's Vadai Makabel Truma, they would only say it's a Suffolk, but the fact is you still have something called the Migdar Milsa. We have to make a gedder on the matter. We can't allow Machlokas to proliferate. So why didn't Rabbi Eliezer accept that? We'll get back to that point in a minute. But one thing we should realize historically is at this point in history, we always think of machlokas as, you know, it's two Jews, three opinions and all that. We think of it's a very natural thing. Two Talmid Chachamim inevitably are going to have an argument and we have no choice but to say there's a machlokas and try to understand both opinions and so forth. Historically, at this point in Jewish history, machlokas as an ongoing thing was something relatively new. We find in Mishnayos Chagiga, we have that beginning from up until the time of Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, who were in the early period of the second Beis Hamikdash, so we're talking over 1,000 years after Matan Torah, there was never any long-running machlokas. First of all, because the Chachamim were tremendously great and they were able to understand the Torah more fully. The Gemara calls them Ashkolos, the Ishtar Kolboi. There were people who knew the entire Torah perfectly, and therefore that leaves less room for machlokas. And even fine, the Rambam points out, inevitably it's true, different people have different dais, so there are going to be machlokas in. They would go to the Sanhedrin, as the Torah tells us in Parshas Shoftim, you go from one base into the next, all the way up to the Sanhedrin, Dola if necessary, and they give you an answer, either based on a Kabbalah that they learned from their Rebbeim, or based on their own analysis with Midas, Chatur, and Adreshus, or whatever, and they give the answer, and that's that. In the time of Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, the Mishnah tells us there was one machlokas that developed as far as a detail of your smicha on a korban on Yom Tov. And that machlokas persisted for a couple of generations, but it was the only one. Then you come to Hillel and Shammai themselves had a couple of machlokas in, five altogether, although only one of them was the same machlokas that they continued. There was one where Hillel ended up conceding to Shammai, and then there were three more that persisted. And their Talmidim already had a few hundred machlokas in. But this was only a generation or two before this story that we're talking about over here, so it was still relatively new and very disturbing, the concept that you should have a long-running machlokas that we can't resolve. That partly explains why in this story over here, the Chachamim are going to take pains to make sure that this machlokas does not persist and make sure and enforce the issue that halacha has to be determined a certain way. We cannot allow Rabbi Eliezer to continue holding his own opinion.
Body that was the deciding body.
So there was, in principle, but the thing is that deciding body was the Sanhedrin. But during the period that we're talking about, from the time of Hillel and Shammai, the conditions under which the Jewish people were living, they'd been conquered by the Romans, you had Hurdus, you had now, it was at this period, the story that we're talking about over here is after the Churban, so things weren't always settled enough for them to be able to gather together and take a vote, and that's that, and that's the way it is. In fact, actually, Rabbi Isaac Halevi in his Sefer Doros HaRishonim has a very interesting explanation. So we have to ask again, why didn't Rabbi Eliezer accept Achir Rabbi Mahatis? So there's a couple of answers. a couple of answers. One of them is, in fact, the Yerushalmi gives an answer because sofu taharoisa b'fona. They burnt things that Rabbi Eliezer had declared tahor based on things that had been baked in such an oven, which, let's say, for example, somebody baked or cooked something in such an oven, and then a sheret fell in, and Rabbi Eliezer would hold the oven is not tameh, so he would declare the food tahor, and the Chacham took such foods and burnt them in his presence. Or Gemara is going to mention that later in the story. But the Yerushalmi seems to take that as that happened earlier on, and therefore, based on that, then Rabbi Eliezer would have considered, so they're not really arguing the Shem Shemayim. If they did like that, they wouldn't be blatantly going and doing that to his face. And in fact, Ion Yaakov points out, if it's a matter of Suffolk, the halacha is, in cases of Suffolk, you don't actually burn the Truma. Tolin, you say that if we suspend it, we have to consider it Tomim Suffolk. So the fact that they did it like that, then he considered they're not necessarily arguing the Shem Shemayim, and therefore he's not necessarily obligated to accept their view. But another way of looking at it is that another way of Isaac Halevi explains like this. At this period, because the Romans had gotten very suspicious of the Chachamim assembling together. Anytime the Chachamim gathered together, you had, and this is only a few years after Rabbi Yerushalmi ben Zakkai had gotten permission, ken liyavne v'chachameha, but soon enough the Romans realized that their mistake, that the Jewish people are reviving because of the Torah they have there, and they're doing everything to prevent that the Chachamim should gather over there and accusing them of gathering together to plot rebellion or whatever. So therefore the Chachamim realized that we can't all assemble in Yavne, it's really too dangerous. So now, at this point, they only had a crew of a few people on hand. You have Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva, that I mentioned in this story. You don't necessarily have most of the other Chachamim over there. On top of that, also, we find in other places that Rabbi Eliezer had the position of Chacham Havad, which, among other things, means that he's responsible for practical day-to-day psak halacha. You have the Nasi, who's the head of the Sanhedrin, and also represents when the Jewish people need representation in front of the Romans or whatever other foreign governments, and the Nasi deals with such things. You have the Abbasin, who's the head of the Sanhedrin, and then you have the Chacham, the Chacham or Chacham, whatever, whose responsibility is basically practical day-to-day psak halacha. That was Rabbi Eliezer's job. Well, that being the case then, so what are you doing, honing in on my territory? But anyway, so Rabbi Isaac Halevi explains, because so few of the Chachamim were able to gather at that point, Rabbi Eliezer could well say, you know, sure, Acher Ad Mahatis, if all of us Chachamim are together and they vote against me, fine, then of course I have to accept that. But you have only four or five of us and you're voting against me? What kind of a proof is that? If the rest of us were here, if all the 71 or 72 members of the Sanhedrin were here, they might well agree with me. And nevertheless, the other Chachamim are saying it doesn't work that way. Well, the story continues. Omalahem, so Rabbi Eliezer says to them, Im halacha kemaisi, if the halacha is like me, choruv zeyechiach, then this carob tree should prove it. And sure enough, neka choruv mimakoyme mea ama, the carob tree was all of a sudden uprooted from its place and moved 100 amas. Vamil dalav mea sama. Others say it moved 400 amas. Seems to be a clear sign, min hashamayim, that he's right, that Hashem is doing a nes on his behalf. And it may well have been, especially following what Ion Yaakov is saying over here, it may well be, you know, the fact is, even they are only being machmer, said Migda Milsa, to make a fence around the thing, to uphold the principle of Achradam Lahatis, but if it weren't for that, they might well have said that we'll agree to accept it, that it's a suffix at best. So therefore, Sashem may well be doing a nest for Rabbi Eliezer to uphold that he has a valid point, that the halacha ought to be like him. However, the Chacham said, you can't bring a proof from a carob tree. So we'll talk about, after we talk about the few nisim over here, we'll talk about what these various things that he used to prove represent over here. Then he continues and tells them, Im halacha kemoisi, fine, if the halacha is like me, amas hamayim yichichu, then let the water channel prove it. And sure enough, chozru amas hamayim lachareyem, the water channel, the water all of a sudden started flowing back. Omruloi, the Chum again answered him, Ein mevin rai ma'amas hamayim, you cannot bring proofs from a water channel. Chodzer v'omalahem, then he tries again and he tells them, Im halacha kemoisi, if the halacha is like me, koisa besamedrash yechichu, then the very walls of the besamedrash themselves should demonstrate the truth. Hitu koisa besamedrash lipo, all of a sudden the walls started leaning over as if they were about to fall. Goy behem Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua yelled at the walls. Amal Lahemi tells him, Im Tamar Chachamim Menatzchim Zeh Zeh B'Halacha, if Tamar Chachamim are fighting against one another and arguing against one another in Halacha, you stay out. After Mativchem, what are you doing mixing in over here? So, Roy Noflum Ipnik Vodash Rabbi Yeshua, the walls did not continue falling because of the covet of Rabbi Yeshua. He told them to stay out, so therefore they're not gonna fall anymore. Veloy Zokfum Ipnik Vodash Rabbi Yezer, but they did not stand up straight again because of the covet of Rabbi Yezer, because Rabbi Yezer had said that they should fall down and prove that he was right. So the result is they're still suspended there. They're still when the story was recorded. They're still leaning, but not actually falling. So what does he mean by doing these things? So first of all, there are a number of Mefarshim who say that maybe this didn't actually happen physically. If you walked into this medrash at that point, you wouldn't literally see carob trees moving or water flowing backwards or whatever. It means, for example, Rabbi Hananel says that one of the Chachamim had a dream where he saw this, and the Chachamim are saying, fine, dreams are a sign min hashamayim, very nice, but nevertheless, the fact is we can't take them as such a given that we can establish halacha according to them. Reb Nissim Goin, in that explanation that he gives in Brachas from Reb Hai Goin, says, these things may well have happened, the Gashmius, but fine, either the Chachamim would say, these are not completely outside the bounds of nature. It has been known to happen that trees are uprooted from a place, by a hurricane or something, and move to another place. It has been known to happen that a current of water will flow backwards or whatever, so therefore, they're not such nissim that we should say that should prove anything. The other possibility of Nissim says is, fine, maybe they are Nissim, but fine, it could be the Eibishter testing us. We find by a Novi Sheker, not to say Chas V'Shalom that Rabbi Eliezer is a Novi Sheker, but the point they could say, we find by a Novi Sheker that the Torah says, Hashem ki minaseh Hashem alekecha meschem, Hashem is testing you, Hashem may allow such a person to do tremendous Nissim, and nevertheless we have to know not to listen to him. So the same way the Chacham would say, very nice, Rabbi Eliezer, Hashem is doing Nissim, and for your honor, that doesn't mean that should establish the halacha.
Yoshka, for instance, the Nissim
the Nissim that he did, right, don't prove anything. That's just right. Either we say it was by sleight of hand or kishur, or even if it is genuinely kirchas of kedusha. Nevertheless, kiminasa Hashem alekecha meschem, Hashem is testing you. Are you going to listen? A couple of them first and talk about the symbolism behind these things. The Ma'aram Shif actually brings that it may refer to great Talmud Chacham of that generation. The carob tree, for example, he says, would refer to Rav Chanina ben Dosa. We have the Gemara in Tainus tells us that Rav Chanina ben Dosa would live off a cab. He and his family would live off a cab of carobs every week. They were extremely poor and they couldn't afford any better food. So he and his family would live off a cab, a couple of pounds of carobs from week to week. So therefore, when he says, let the carob tree come here, means he brought in Rav Chanina ben Dosa to argue his case. And the Chum said, very nice, you brought in a great Baal Maisim, a great tzaddik and everything, but unless he has solid proof, Safi Torah, in your favor, then it's not going to work. And the same thing with the other ones represents that he brought in other great Chachamim, or he brought in the Talmidim to argue on his behalf, and each one the Chachamim shot them down. Marsha talks about over here like this. When we have the Chachamim argue among themselves. Now the Gemara tells us in Chagiga like this. There's a pasuk at the end of Kehelas that compares the words of the Chachamim to masmeres netuim, like nails that are firmly planted in place. So one thing, why do we use the word netuim that are planted? So the Gemara explains over there, because of planting, you plant it in the ground and it flourishes and produces branches and fruit and whatnot. And the same way, that's what, when you learn Torah, then it develops. You have more and more developments and more chidushim that are brought in it. And the pasuk continues. The pasuk calls them balei asufos, the ones who gather together, means the chachamim gather together and discuss halacha. And the pasuk finishes off, nitnu meroya echad, it was all given from one shepherd. As much as we have the chachamim argue, So therefore, Gemara says over there, don't try to pick and choose. Well, I think this Chacham is greater, and therefore the Halacha is like him. You pay attention, listen, open up your ear like a funnel, the Gemara says over there, and listen and try to understand both opinions. Because Eilu Ve'ele Dibrei Elokim Chayim. So therefore, in other words, the idea is, there's many, many different explanations of Chlal. When we say Eilu Ve'ele Dibrei Elokim Chayim, what does that actually mean? One of the many explanations which Maharsha follows over here is, in everything in the world, there could be a reason to say that it's Tomei and a reason to say that it's Tahor, and the same thing with each of the other things. It all depends on the individual perspective. The bottom line is, Torah, down here on earth, you have to decide one way or the other. The thing has to be either Tomei or Tahor. There's no room for equivocation. But Lamaila, we can understand, because the idea that it's true, the idea that it's Tomei or the idea that it's Tahor, both of them are in fact true as it is Lamaila. So now, therefore, don't think, well, one is good and the other one, forget about it. No, you have to realize that both of them have truth. So now, Rabbi Eliezer is saying to them, you know what? Sure, achud adam lahatis, but when does that apply? Only if it's like natio potavirova. Only if you have that the Torah is actually growing and flourishing and developing with you. But you, he says, you know what? A carob tree, yes, you plant it and eventually you'll get carobs from it. But it takes many years. The Gemara says in a few places, it takes 70 years. So right now, he says, your explanations, your ideas in Torah, he's telling them, are as fruitless as a carob tree that's not yet 70 years old. So let the carob tree prove that I already have the flourishing and the development and the full knowledge of every area of Torah, and you don't have that yet. So therefore, that achud adam lahatis shouldn't apply in this case. So they tell him, on the contrary, Ein Mavin Raim and Achoru, when that carob tree moves, on the contrary, it may show that you are like the carob tree and we are not. So you don't have proof. So then he says, Amas Amayin Yichiach, he tells them, fine. He says, though, the problem, you know what might be? Maybe, in fact, you know the truth that the halacha is like me. However, maybe you don't have the bittul, you have a shtickle gaiva, and you don't want to admit it. So each one is embarrassed to say, I hold like this, and now I'm going to have to change my mind. It's embarrassing to have to say that. And why is Torah compared to water? Because they go, m'mokim gevoyal, m'mokim namo. Because Torah doesn't stay by the balei gaiva. So therefore he says, let the water flow backwards, as if to say, that will show that I have the proper anivos, and you guys do not. But they answered him, so therefore, again, achud adam lahatis shouldn't apply. And they tell him, Ein Mavin Raya, on the contrary, maybe it shows that you insisting that even though you're the minority, the halacha has to be like you, the same way maybe Fakir, the water is showing, maybe the water flowing backwards is showing not to follow you. Then he says, Kois the Beis HaMedrash, in the sense that he says that you're arguing not necessarily the Shem Shemayim, again, like we brought before from the Yerushalmi, he's saying that all of their arguing against them is not necessarily purely the Shem Shemayim. So in that case, who needs a Beis Medrash? In that case, you don't need a Beis Medrash, and it might as well fall down. But then Rabbi Yeshua says no. The Bate Medrash are going to continue standing, And we're going to go according to Das Rabim, because you think that we're not doing Lashem Shemayim, but whether that's so or not, the fact is every Talmud Chacham puts his energy into it and fights according to Torah, according to what he understands in Torah. Don't start accusing that we're doing not Lashem Shemayim. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't know what the other person is thinking. You rules of the Beis Medrash. You need to stay standing over there. We need to continue to have a Beis Medrash where we're going to continue to fight the war of Torah. And so therefore we're saying that the fact is in every generation, I die in Matin Voimlin, the fact is in every generation you do. You have Talmud Chachamim who tackle learn purely the Shem Shemayim, like Rabbi Yeshua is arguing. You do unfortunately have Talmud Chachamim who learn just in order to show their prowess of what great Talmud Chachamim they are, and not purely the Shem Shemayim, like Rabbi Eliezer is saying. The fact is you do have some of both, and therefore you have no choice, but therefore that's how it is. The walls are still inclining in the sense that it's true. You're gonna find in a typical Beis Medrash, you're gonna find both types. So that's the thing. So you have some Mefoshim who understand that the wall is literally bent, and you have others who understand, for example, Rabbeinu Hanano, that this was all a dream that one of the Chachamim had. The Maharal also talks about that it may be all symbolic. First of all, again, you have, for example, the Maharam Shif's explanation, that it means, for example, it is appealing to Rav Chanina ben Dosa, and he's appealing to Talmidim and whatever. So then in that case, we're also not necessarily talking about physical carob trees and water and walls. There's also an explanation, I think, from the Vilna Gaon that says, along somewhat similar lines as Marsha, but different, that a Talmud Chacham needs to have three qualities in order to be able to be a real Talmud Chacham. He has to be ready to be, you know, like we have in Pirkei Avos, Pas v'melach toichel. He has to be willing to get by on very little food and sleep and whatever. That's represented by the carob tree. Again, like Rav Chanina ben Dosa, who manages on a cab of carobs from one Erev Shabbos to the next. He has to have anivus, like Maharsha is saying, water represents anivus, and he has to have the zitzfleish to sit and learn Torah in the Beis Medrash. So Rabbi Eliezer is arguing each of those things I have in the full measure, and therefore that's reason enough the halacha should be like me. And each one the Chachamim are saying, very nice, you have that quality. That still doesn't mean the halacha has to be like you. Okay, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Eliezer tries again. He says to them, "Im halacha kamosi min hashamayim yechichu." Then it should be demonstrated min hashamayim that the halacha is like me. Sure enough, Yatsas a bas kol v'omra, a bas kol came out and announced, "Malachem etzer Rabbi Eliezer, why are you arguing against Rabbi Eliezer? Shahalacha kamosi b'chol mokim, the halacha is like him in every place." You think what's there after that? Nope. Omer Rabbi Yeshua al Raglav, Rabbi Yeshua got up on his feet, v'omer, and he announced, the Pasuk says, Loi b'shamayim hi, the Torah is not in Shemayim. My Loi b'shamayim hi, what does Rabbi Yeshua mean by that? Omer Rabbi Yemiya, Shekran nitna Torah mehar Sinai, the Torah has already been given on Har Sinai, Ein onu mashgichin b'baskel. We do not pay any attention when it comes to deciding halacha in a baskel, Shekran kasabta b'Torah b'Har Sinai, you yourself, the Evishter, wrote in the Torah in Har Sinai, Achri Rabim Lahatus, we have to follow the majority. So loy nitna Torah malach hasharis, the ones that, in fact, you know, the malachim argued the Torah should stay in Shemayim, but it's not so. The Torah was given here on earth, and therefore, so only we bus of Adam who are learning here on earth, we're the ones who are to decide what the Torah is.
That's also heard by everybody.
The Vasko was heard by everybody there in the Beis Medrash. Yeah? Now, Tosfos brings up a point like this. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were arguing on in many different areas of halacha, and eventually a baskel came out and said the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And there we do follow that baskel on the face of it. So why over here is Rabbi Yeshua saying that we don't? So Tosfos gives the answer because Over there, the baskel is not coming to contradict what the Torah says. The fact is, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, Beis Hillel was the majority over Beis Shammai. The only reason why we would have thought the halacha is like Beis Shammai is because the Gemara says they were charifi tfei. They were very sharp and very well-versed in Torah, in the ability to argue in Torah, and therefore that might have been a reason to decide the halacha like them. But eventually we say, Acheram lahatas, and the baskel is only coming to confirm that. Whereas over here, the baskel is coming to contradict what the usual rule of Acherdam Lahatas, and Rabbi Yeshua says, therefore we can't accept that. Also, Tosfos says, another reason is because Rabbi Eliezer had appealed to the Baskel, and therefore it came out in his honor, to honor him, but not necessarily that it means that the halacha should in fact be like him. Rabbi Nissim Goin, in his explanation there in Brachas, says, listen, you know, the Baskel, we don't have to say the Baskel, what are we going to say, the Baskel is lying, Chas v'Shalom? No, it can mean, for example, halacha k'mosi b'chol mokim, that the halacha is like him in most places, not necessarily this particular one. So therefore, we don't necessarily have to accept that.
Rav Moshe
Feinstein has a truva in one of his truvas. He has a truva to one of his sons who asked him to explain further in this Tosfos and this whole business of using or not using a baskel. One point Rav Moshe makes over there, when the baskel says halacha kamosi b'chol mokim, doesn't necessarily mean that the final practical halacha down here on earth should be like that. Like Maharsha said before, Eilav Eilav Dibre Elokim Chaim, there is room in total logic for the one who says tome, and there is room in Torah logic for the one who says Torah. All the Baskel might be saying, Mishum Kvoida, Shirab Eliezer, you should know his position has validity al pi Torah. Don't dismiss it altogether and say he has no right to his opinion. He has every right to his opinion. And it has a truth of Torah. It has an Eilu Ba'eilu Dibre Elokim Chaim in it. Doesn't necessarily mean that the actual halacha down here on earth has to follow that, though.
Could be going back to what they were arguing, if it's a real arguing, or is it about the ego?
That too, yeah, yep, yeah. If a baskel is coming out, then it shows that they're right. There's no ego involved over here. Both of them are doing l'shem shemayim. But what?
Does the Eilu Ba'eilu Dibre Elokim Chaim down here match shemayim?
So does what? No, so when we say, that's the thing. When we say, look, there's many, many different explanations of what Ayla Bela Dibrela Kimfayin means. There's entire libraries that have been filled with discussions of that. But one of the many meanings of Ayla Bela Dibrela Kimfayin means each one of them has truth according to the Rotzen Elyon. There is. The Gemara mentions in some places you have Memtes Ponim Tomei or Memtes Ponim Toher. You have 49 ways in which we can look at something as Tomei and 49 Toher. In other words, it all depends, a lot of it depends on the Chacham's perspective. Each Chacham brings his own brain and his own, each Chacham learnt differently and was shaped differently by different things, and therefore he uses his logic, the Torah logic that he developed over his lifetime to understand the Torah each in his own way, and each of them is, in fact, coming up with one of the ways which the Ratzon HaElyon said would be valid. In the end, Halacha L'maaseh has to be one and only one thing. But nevertheless, and as far as the MS as it is up Lamaila, there can be multiple possible ways. Yeah. Actually, Anaf Yosef also makes a point over here. He says, you know what? In truth, it's similar to what Ian Yaakov said, that the Chachamim might well have said that it's only a suffix. It might be really that the Chachamim would agree. Maybe this particular kind of oven, the way it was constructed, might in fact not be Makabel Truma. However, it's very similar to other kinds that are Makabel Truma, and people might not realize the difference. So therefore, there could be a truth in it that, in fact, Rabbi Eliezer has a valid point, and therefore Basco can come out to defend him, that it's true this particular oven is, in truth, different than the other ones, and therefore it shouldn't be Makabel Truma. But the Chachamim are not accepting that because they say the fact is the Hamoin Am are not going to understand that difference, and therefore we have to be Metameh. And since Achir Rabban Lahatas, then even though Basco may tell us that Hashem truly holds that it should be Tahr, nevertheless, down here on earth, we have to consider how things are on earth and how the Hamoin Am is going to understand things, and therefore we have no choice but to be Metame. So the Gemara tells, many years later, Ashkechei Rav Nosson Eliyahu, years later, Rav Nosson, who was from a later generation, once met up with Eliyahu. Omale, he asked him, "My Ovid Kutcher Brichu Bahu Shaita." What did Hashem do at that moment? Rabbi Yeshua is literally on the face of it, standing up there and defying Hashem, so to speak, and saying, "You're telling us the halacha is like Rabbi Yezer, but we're not going to pay attention because Achir Am Lahatas." How did Rabbi Yeshua react at that moment? Omale, so Eliyahu answers, "Kochayich ba'omah." Hashem smiled, so to speak, and said, Nitzchuni bonai. My children have defeated me. This also, there's many, many different explanations of what this means. On one level, it means exactly that. Yeah, the Eibishter told us, Achir Am Lahatas, and yeah, Halacha is actually, the Torah is shaped by our human brains, obviously not every person, like Kora Lotza Lutza Lotza Shem, no person can't say, you know, Das Balabais, Hekach Das Torah, and all that, so you can't say, I decided on my own that this is not logical, and this is not whatever, and start changing Halacha, but we're talking about over here, tremendously great Chachamim, whose minds are molded by Torah and by Bittul to the Eibishter, and therefore yes, their brains and their understanding taka shapes how the Torah is, and it creates new things in Torah. This is the whole idea of making Kedushi Torah as well. Yeah. Their Chelek HaKamimal has the ability to do that, in effect, so to speak, to change the Torah, or at least to change the application of Torah as it is down here on earth. That's one meaning of Nitzchuni Bonai. Hashem gives us a Torah, and then after that, Hashem expects us to use our understanding to create Chedushei Torah in it, and to develop the flowers and branches that Marasha was referring to before. There was an interesting point that the Ran makes in a couple of his drashas on the subject. He says one meaning of the Eibishter saying Nitzchuni Bana Nitzchuni can be the Eibishter saying, you know what? At the end of the day, the Chachamim maybe Taka made a mistake. The fact is, the Bastol is telling them that the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Meaning, in other words, maybe if they had analyzed the matter more, they might have actually come to Rabbi Eliezer's conclusion. But the fact is, with what they had, with the tools that they had, they came to this conclusion. And the Eibishter is saying, in effect, you know what? Fine, maybe it was a mistake, but since I myself put in the Torah, Achir Am Lahatas, they're being correct in following that. It may mean it doesn't exactly match what the Rotzon HaElyon wants. Doesn't matter. Once they decided this based on Achir Am Lahatas, then that is, then the fact of the Chinuch also makes a similar point that, in other words, basically, the danger of Nasis Torah Kishtei Tertus, the danger that the Torah is going to split into many different Tertus because we don't have a clear conclusion, that overrides the fact that in one particular area the Chachamim might make a mistake. So yes, maybe objectively, maybe in other words, we're saying Eilevele, Direle, King Chaim, in the sense that you could say that objectively there's no one particular way it has to be, every one of them has a truth to it, which is what Marashal is saying. Another way of looking at it is Eilevele, Direle, King Chaim, it can taka mean that there is one way and only one way that the Eidishta decided that it should truly be. This thing should either be Tameh or Torah. The Eidishta either created our Shalosh Klippas Atmeh, so out of Klippas Noga, for example. So it could happen, in other words, that the Chachamim, in effect, are making a mistake and assigning something to Sholosh Klippas Atmeis when it should be to Klippas Noga. But it doesn't matter. The danger of Nasas Torah Kishtei Torah is so much greater than that, that if in one particular time it happens, so rare that the Chacham should make a mistake anyway, if it happens punked one time that they did, the fact that we have one Torah rather than multiple Torahs is worth it. Is worth it for that. That's another meaning of Nitzchuni Bona Nitzchuni.
Looking at it, maybe like quantum mechanics, that now we don't know what is the aloha, but the minute that they decided this is the aloha, the whole universe changes.
So that is one way of explaining it also. That's true. One way of explaining Eilevele, Direle, King Chaim is just that each of these possibilities exists in the Rotzen Elyon, and eventually when the Chachamim decide one of them, then it becomes that way, and now this thing becomes part of Sholosh Klippas Atmeis or part of Klippas Noga, as the case may be. The Ran is in effect saying, not even use the words Klippas Noga and Sholosh Klippas Atmeis, but the Ran and the Chinuch are saying in effect, not necessarily so. It may well be that the Eivishter's original plan was that this oven should not be able to be Mekabel Tumah, like Rabbi Yehuda says, but once the Chachamim have decided differently, it might be a mistake. It doesn't matter. The fact that we have now one unified Torah and that we have one Halacha that everybody's going to follow is worth it, the occasional very rare mistake, basically. Omru. So the Chachamim said, what happened, the continuation of the story, going back to Rabbi Yezer, to the time of Rabbi Yezer and the Chachamim. Oysa yom heviu kol taras shakir Rabbi Yezer. On that day, they brought all the things that Rabbi Yezer, all the foods and things that Rabbi Yezer had declared to her, the sofum ba'esh, and they burnt them in fire. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains that when they asked this question in the Beis Medrash, there was an actual oven like that. Why they come to ask the question in the first place is because somebody had such an oven, such a tanur shalachnoi, and they had baked food in it, or cooked food in it, or tumah had fallen into it, such as a dead sheretz or whatever. Later on, they had baked or cooked food in it. Rabbi Eliezer had declared that food to her following his shitta. Now the Chachamim took that food and came and burnt it And again, the Yerushalmi says they actually did it to his face, which is why, to begin with, the Rebbe Eliezer figured that they were maybe not doing this L'shem Shemayim, because why would they have to do such an insulting thing right to his face? But here, the Chachamim did it, again, in order to underscore, this is the halacha, and there's no fooling around with it. The Nimnu Olav Berchu, and then the Chachamim voted to put him in Nidri. Berchu means they blessed him, it's a euphemism, meaning that they put him in Nidri.
They still disagreed
after all of that. The Ramban.
Zokin Mamre.
In effect, you know, it was almost like Zokin Mamre, but and this is after the Sanhedrin had moved from Lushka Sagozis, so it's not technically not you're not able to do the technical din of Zokin Mamre anymore. But yeah, in effect, they had to do that. The Gemara mentions in some other places, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Nida, for example, that Rabbi Eliezer was extremely popular among the Hamoinam. So therefore they had to make a public demonstration basically that he's on the outs in order that people should not continue to follow him in this and in other areas where he disagreed with the Chachamim. The Gemara even gives an example over there in Nida of a certain thing, a certain din in Hilchos Nida, where Rabbi Yeshua, who we're saying over here was the main one arguing with Rabbi Eliezer, actually agrees with Rabbi Eliezer on a certain din. But the Gemara says over there, as long as Rabbi Eliezer was alive, they didn't want to announce that. They still continue to say the halacha is not like him, because if people follow him in one thing, they're going to end up following him in another, and you're still going to have the problem of Nasas Torah Kishtei Torah. Once Rabbi Eliezer passed away, you don't have that danger anymore, then they could announce the halacha in that particular case of Hilchos Nida is like Rabbi Eliezer. So here, in a similar vein, they had to put him in Nidui, because he's still insisting that the halacha should be like him. They have to keep him out. They have to keep him out of the mismatch. The Ramban explains over here in some detail that maybe it's not necessarily technical nidui. The Tosfos discusses over here, based on the Gemara continues the story. We'll learn more of it next time, Baz Hashem, that he took off his shoes and other things. These are things that normally a person in nidui has to do. So that may mean that it was true nidui, but the Ramban is saying over here, Maybe not necessarily. Maybe it just means basically they excluded him from their company. He can't come to the Beis Medrash anymore, but he's not actually in technical nidui, and other people are in fact allowed to be close to him, and so on and so on and so forth. So we'll continue the story next time, Beis Hashem. But yeah. So it was a very traumatic thing, as you can imagine. And we find later on in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, when before Rabbi Eliezer passed away, there was more of a sequel to the story. We haven't even finished the story over here, but before Rabbi Eliezer passed away, there's also he cried over the fact that all those years he had so much to teach Torah and he wasn't able to.
He said, whatever they know is compared to a bird, brings them from a...
Whatever my Talmidim learned from me is like a dog lapping up from the ocean, and whatever I learned from my Talmid, from my Rebbeim, is like an applicator dipping into a tube of eyeshadow, or maybe it's the other way around. Yeah, the point is that, I learned relatively little from my Rebbeim, and my Talmidim learned relatively little from me, right? Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGaola, Zayin Kislev. This was a sicha on Shabbos that everyone was talking about, the taker from Yad, as the positive says, Yosef Hashem Shenis Yadeh, Hashem will again stretch out his hand and gather all of the dispersed Jewish people throughout the world from Arba Kanfis Aret and bring everybody in. Veshov Hashem Alekecha, as the positive says, that Hashem will return, meaning not just that he returns us, but he returns with us, beginning already from the Suda of Mitzoy Shabbos, Kodesh, the Suda of David Malka Mashicha. In fact, such a Suda that we'll be able to have together with David Malka Mashicha at our head, because on Shabbos Kodesh already the Mashiach could come. It can come Imanani Shmaya, the Gemara discusses in Erevin, Ein Tchum and Lamayla Ma'asara, and therefore that Mashiach could actually come from outside the Tchum even on Shabbos. And we come to Arzenu HaKadosha, to Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, to the Hara Kodesh, to the Beis Mikdash, and even to the Kodesh Kodoshim, which is a different sikha where the Rebbe talks about how we can say we go into the Kodesh Kodoshim when that's only for the Kohen Gadol. Is one thing is repairmen can go in there, etc. So yeah. But the point is, in other words, every time, every Shabbos afternoon, we're soon going to have Malava Malka, is to keep in mind that Malava Malka can in fact be with David HaMelech already sitting and leading the Malava Malka. Yeah, that too. Yeah. Okay, so we started talking about, in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim, we were talking about the point that a person has to wash his hands in the morning, and one reason is because his hands are dirty, and then based on that would also be that, technically according to that, a person should have to make a bracha when he washes before Shachris, Mincha, and Ma'ariv as well, because there you actually have to wash with water, Mashenk, and other times during the day where you wouldn't necessarily make a bracha. However, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, the minhag of old Jewish people is not like that. We don't in fact make the bracha al Netilas Yadayim only in the morning when we wash Negevaser. Because the Takanas HaChamim is specifically to wash our hands every morning. Now, it's not just according to this explanation, it's not so our hands should be clean for davening, because again, then you should tack after wash and make a bracha before each of the three daily tefillas. Rather, the reason is because the Zohar explains in Parshas Vayeshev, and the Gemara also mentions the point, because there's a Ruach HaTumah on the hands in the morning, and therefore you have to wash Negevaser in the morning to get rid of that. Why would there be a Ruach HaTumah? Because the Neshama, the full Kedusha of the Neshama, leaves a person's goof at night when he sleeps. So therefore, now there's room for Ruach HaTumah. So now in the morning, he has to gain again Kedusha, the Kedusha of the Eivishter, by pouring water, Tahar water from a keli, like a Kohen who does Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim from the keel. And that would be why we say Asher Kiddushanu, why that Hashem we say Hashem made us holy. Now in general, that's the bracha we say on mitzvahs, but we're specifically over here because we're saying that this mitzvah of Netilas Yadayim is for the purpose of making us holy. Like the Kohenim serving in the Beis Mikdash. There's a sicha someplace where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea why the Kohenim had to wash their feet, and we don't have an Indian in the morning that we have to wash our feet specifically, but according to that second explanation, then that applies only to the Netilas Yadayim in the morning, and that reason would not apply to washing before the other daily tefillas.
Taking